The Nordic countries are among the best educated people in the world. One of the measures is the number of adults completing tertiary education. Norway and Finland are both top 10 countries, with Sweden, Iceland and Denmark also in the top 20 globally. In the past, Finland has topped the OECD's PISA rankings of the world's best performing students, and in the most recent ranking is still a top 10 country, with Sweden at number 11 and the other Nordic countries not far behind. People argue about the relevance and accuracy of PISA, not least the Swedes, who look on at their neighbours' success with some envy. But the success of the Nordics goes beyond international rankings. What's interesting is that their education systems seem to play such a central role in the cohesiveness of these societies. The schools, the Nordic social welfare model, civic society, attitudes to education, respect for the profession of teaching, and of course public funding, not just for school-age kids, but for lifetime learning, all seem to be mutually reinforcing. It's impossible to separate one from the other. We've teamed up with the Nordic Council of Ministers for 5 special editions of the Foreign Desk Explainer, delving deeper into topics of global importance from the region: green transport, biodiversity and protecting nature, cultural collaboration, political cooperation, and the subject of this episode, education. How did Finland become a global education frontrunner? Are there lessons for the rest of the world in how the Nordic countries future-proof their children? And why on earth, as an adult, would you choose to spend your summer holiday going back to school? I'm Michael Booth, and this is the Foreign Desk Explainer.
If the students in Denmark did what they should, they would go straight through the educational system and not look to the sides. We forget that the most important weapon we have is the mind.
They don't assume that they know what the future is going to bring. And so they train kids to think more about how they can be resilient and adaptable in those environments.
We're in the Nordics, but there's a more social aspect, so you're not as introvert in some things.
That was Krista Elmgreen, a Finnish student who's chosen to leave her homeland's much vaunted education system to continue her studies in Denmark. She was talking about the differences between Finnish and Danish students. It seems even the Finns can learn from their neighbours when it comes to education. My name is Michael Booth. I'm Monocle's man in Denmark and the author of a book about the Nordic region, The Almost Nearly Perfect People. For this special edition of the Foreign Desk Explainer, in association with the Nordic Council of Ministers, we've been talking to people from the region to hear what's so special about education in this part of the world. From Denmark, we'll hear about 2 types of school unique to the country, which open up learning possibilities in a quite radical way for teenagers and all the way up to retirees. But first, we're off to Finland. For many years, Finland has been one of the leading education superpowers, not just in the Nordic region, but globally. The curious thing is that Finnish kids do less homework and spend less time in class than the global average, and the cost of the education system there is also below average. There are no school rankings, no teacher rankings, fewer exams, so what's going on? What's the secret behind the Nordic nation's world-beating success? Monocle's Helsinki correspondent Petri Bertsoff went along to meet Professor Hanele Niemi of the Faculty of Educational Sciences at the University of Helsinki to hear whether there are lessons for the rest of the world in Finland's success and how it's facing the future.
We have been very successful in international measurements, like these PISA measurements for 15-year-old students. 2000, we were best in the world, and it also caused a lot of attention to Finland.
Why has Finland been so successful?
Excellent teachers, evaluation system that supports, and equity as leading principle. Every young people needs good education, and it should be available easily at local level.
If you could offer some lessons that the rest of the world could take from the Finnish approach, what would they be?
Everywhere, in every nation, education is so rooted in historical background and also political situation. So it's very difficult to bring the whole new system with those values, what are there behind, for example, this equity principle. But I think that we have certain kind of issues which can be learned from Finland. Our evaluation system is something what I see that it's special kind. We assess nationally, but we don't rank schools, we don't rank teachers. We want to have data, but only for development, that it gives some idea and also signals what are going in not so good direction, what we should change. That's the same kind of principle is also in student assessment. We put more emphasis on so-called formative assessment, which means that during the process, give support. Teachers must assess in time what are the difficulties and in which way students' learning could be supported. We trust more on support than control. And that's something in many countries, there are standardized testing, there are all the time control rankings, but we don't trust that. It's better to try to give support in time.
How is the Finnish education system changing to adapt to the challenges of the modern world?
Every 10 years, we assess how our core curriculum is working. We want to update that in such a way that we can forecast what are the changes. And that means that this process, there are huge amount of partners, teachers, parents, business sector, teacher unions, so much different kind of experts trying to figure out what is changing and in which way the school should change. Nowadays, we also have more and more effort to have so-called multidisciplinary modules so that different subject matters are working together and students have to learn so-called phenomena-based learning. So that means that we look what happens around our world and then in which way we understand that. And students have to do projects and their own explorations in which way they understand what happens in neighborhood, in natural environment. But then we have also 7 big areas, so-called transversal competencies, where we want to give students abilities and capabilities how they can handle changing situation. What is their understanding of different kind of media, but also what is conflicts when they see different kinds of evidence or news or advertisements, how they see what is critical points and in which way they have to evaluate that. So that's one example of these future competencies, how we understand, how we learn to think critically, how we also manage everyday life. And it also had very strong emphasis on societal issues. So, for example, sustainable development and give students attitude and understanding what is our responsibility. So I think that there are so many different levels, but very important is that we prepare our students for the future.
That was Professor Hanele Niemi of Helsinki University. Elsewhere in the Finnish capital, one technology consultancy company, Reactor, together with Helsinki University, is helping the already pretty tech-savvy Finns keep ahead of technological advances in coding and artificial intelligence.
So my name is Megan Scheibel, and I am the COO of Reactor Education. It's a new business unit within Reactor, which is a technology consultancy, and we're focusing on education and edtech. Elements of AI is a free online course on the basics of AI. It was done in collaboration with Reactor and the University of Helsinki, aimed specifically at people who are typically left out of technology discussions. So the sort of main impetus for us was, if AI is going to be really ubiquitous in all of our lives and is already demonstrating the fact that it's going to be really, really powerful, it shouldn't be left in the hands of a few elite coders. The average person should at least have a grasp on how it works, what it does, what it can't do, and how it actually impacts their daily lives, just so they can make better decisions as consumers and voters and users of online technologies. We've also seen, you know, taking a step back and looking at Finland in a wider context, that the sort of economic miracle that has happened in Finland is really brought about by a heavy amount of technology education. So Finns themselves have really a huge amount of internet penetration and a huge amount of tech savvy, people coming out of school with these kind of degrees, and that has really contributed to where the economy has really been boosted forward. So elements of AI is meant to contribute to that sort of story arc and that history, pushing it forward even further into the space of artificial intelligence.
What would you say that, looking at and talking to people who've done the course, what would you say that the course has achieved?
They've said that it's kind of put them on the right track at this point in their career. It's given them a perspective on just how the technologies that they're already using in their daily lives have a lot of underlying AI already, and they can understand where the future will take them in the future of work, the future of their consumer goods, and what this is actually going to mean in their daily lives.
You work a lot with Finnish students who completed the basic education in Finland or maybe in universities now. Also, as a foreigner based in Finland, I mean, how do you see the Finnish education model?
Well, first of all, Finns are very, very tech savvy. I think that that's something that's a sort of known thing here. We live in a little bit of a bubble. Everybody is kind of really aware of what's going on, and there's a lot of technology students and people that are educated in those fields. But even when you look at younger students, one of the things that I admire about the sort of program here is that they don't assume that they know what the future is going to bring. And so they train kids to think more about how they can be resilient and adaptable in those environments. When the course was first launched, we actually picked up the phone and called every single high school in Finland. And right now, over 95% of them actually offer elements of AI as part of the curriculum, which is just a huge testament to how flexible and open things can be, particularly because this is an online course.
So my name is Milja Lassila, and I study sociology at the University of Eastern Finland, and I completed the elements of AI. I think it was the first lot back in 2018. I think I learned a lot about the applications and implications of AI. Now we are living in a society which is constantly, well, I wouldn't say battling, but having a conversation with AI. So I think it's really important to know what's going on. For example, the WhatsApp situation we had a few months back. So I think it's easier to align with the conversation we are having right now. What is interesting, if we're looking from the sociology part, quite strange how divided the Finnish labor market is, for example, how the STEM fields are filled with male representatives and females are in the margin. But so I see these kind of courses that are not obligatory to be really about opening the fields up, bringing the barriers down.
That was Milja Lassila, a graduate of Reactor's groundbreaking AI and coding course. The WhatsApp controversy she was referring to concerned a January update to the Facebook-owned app, which raised concerns over data sharing. To Denmark now, perhaps not quite as high achiever in the international school tables as Finland, but with a couple of very special types of school which have deep historical roots and which have some great lessons to teach us right now about adapting to the fast-moving world in which we live. The first we're going to hear about are the Højskola, or folk high schools, with which just about every Dane comes into contact at some point in their life. They were founded 177 years ago, at a time when Denmark was reinventing itself for the industrial age. The idea was to provide free education for everyone, regardless of background or income, throughout their adult life. In many ways, the Højskola have formed Danish society as it is today, and they're beginning to find enthusiasts elsewhere in the world, as I discovered when I met the woman in charge of the nation's 76 schools.
My name is Lisbeth Trinskjær, and I'm head of all the Højskolas in Denmark. It's a place where adults learn. We have no fixed curriculum. We live together, we eat together, we sleep in the school. And the whole idea is that you learn about life, you learn about philosophies, you learn about the future and yourself, and you go into this kind of room for expanding the horizon and at the same time finding out where your own position is. In one hand, I have Jyderup Højskole, one of our newest, very red, very left wing. And at the other end, I have Rønshoved Højskole in the south of Jutland, very traditional, very conservative. On the political spectrum, they are complete opposite, but they have very many common values. The respect for the individual, the idea that one individual can actually change something, eagerness to participate in society, and the idea that you should, as a person, not only look for your own interests, but also that you are part of a society.
Is this samfundssind, yeah. This famous word?
Yeah, it is. That is samfundssind.
And what is samfundssind? This was a word that the Prime Minister of Denmark used a lot during the initial COVID crisis to kind of inspire Danes to look after each other and work together, right?
Right. So ever since 1844... we've had this basic idea that as individuals, we have an obligation to society and the common good.
How do Danes use the high school?
The normal way of doing it is that when you have finished high school and before you go to university, usually you go to high school.
For a year or half a year?
No, half a year or 4 months or 3 months or 5 months, depending on what you're doing. For many young people, they have an idea of where their interests are, also for what they want to do in a future profession. And when they go to high school, they find out, that's not what I want. I want something completely different. So some of them make very drastic turns after their high school experience.
Is there something essentially Nordic about it? And there are high schooler now all over the Nordic region, right?
When you say it sounds very Nordic, I would be very pompous and say, I think Nordic countries are quite high schooler. Because actually, what came first, the idea of the Nordic citizen today or in 177 years ago? I would argue that that came 177 years ago. So you could say that that thinking is actually, it has soaked into so many areas of our identity. This whole notion that we have, that freedom is so important, and the freedom of thought. My own folk high school, we have students from 18 to plus 70. And I have butchers and I have electricians and I have guys with tattoos on their necks and things like that. And I also have the wife who has cooked for a family for 40 years.
The Japanese and Koreans are very interested in high school, I know.
Yes, and I think it has a lot to do with the combination of a very large love for freedom and at the same time, an idea and respect of the common good. In Japan, there's a girl called Momoko Noyo. She saw this whole situation with the Japanese Olympic boss, who said that women shouldn't speak in meetings. And she expressed that under the hashtag Don't Be Silent. And then she gathered signatures. She didn't think she could change anything. Japan is not an easy place to change. But look and behold.
Mori was sacked within
exactly.
A week.
Exactly. Need I say that she went to a high school in Denmark?
I'm very interested in the adults who come to high school. I know many Danes myself who have, during their summer holiday, they'll go either as a couple or singly or with their whole families, depending on what subject it is. It's quite odd from the outside to hear that, how are you spending your summer holiday? I'm not going to Alicante. I'm going to do 2 weeks of bookbinding in Jutland or something like that. But it's a very normal part of a Danish holiday.
It is. It's impossible to navigate in society and in future with what we've just learned. We can't do
that.
At
school.
Yeah. Because we don't know the future. And I think that's what they feel that they get when they come to high school.
And you have a special songbook.
Yes.
That's one of the most popular books in Denmark.
Actually, and it's just the most popular book in Denmark, actually. But we find that in a very, very individualistic society, as we are, we need to be with people. We need to share things that are important. And what happens when we sit together and we sing, we have to listen to each other. If the students in Denmark did what they should, they would go straight through the educational system and not look to the sides. We are so into streamlining education now
that we forget that the most important weapon we have is the mind. So if you lose the ability and the courage to think for yourself, then you're lost as a person and as a person in society.
Living in Denmark as I do, I've watched my own two children pass through the Danish education system with interest, obviously, but also with quite a bit of envy. That's because, mostly, they've had a far, far better time at school than I ever had, or that they probably would have had if they'd grown up today in the UK. Occasionally, I might have grown a little bit restive over what I interpreted as an emphasis on Danish school kids, you know, having a nice time over actually learning stuff. But generally, I only have good things to say about the insight they gave me into Nordic education, and no more so than when it comes to their efterskole experience. If there was one innovation from the Nordic education system that I would endorse for the rest of the world, it's the Danish efterskoler or afterschools. It's an amazing concept. I'll let Mette Hjort Madsen explain what it's all about.
I am Mette Hjort Madsen. I'm vice president of the Association of Efterskoler. An efterskole is a kind of boarding school that doesn't exist really in the exact form outside Denmark. Pupils live there and they are between 14 and 18 years of age.
And you can specialise in anything you want, basically, at an efterskole. If you have an interest or a passion as a teenager, you can go there and kind of live it.
Yes. It's always combined with a sort of regular school. So you can't do golf only or baking only or horses only. You'd have to do Danish and math and English and typically also physics and chemistry alongside it.
But you can do baking and you can do journalism do water skiing or anything almost, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But how many different types of subject can you study?
Oh, gosh, I think we have a search engine online where you can search for it by your interest. And I think we currently have around 180 topics.
Can you give me some of the more extraordinary ones? Because I know I can understand there's lots of media and sport and music, but...
Poetry slam would be one. Duck hunting would be another one. Role play.
Esports as well.
Esports, yeah. Well, that's not extraordinary anymore. We actually have 80 schools that offer some kind of gaming, programming, esports line.
And what's the thinking behind it? I have two sons who have gone to after school, and here's my thinking. By the age of 16, kids don't listen to a word their parents say, and you've got to kind of give up raising them. But when we sent our kids to an after school, it was like the kids raise each other.
My take would be if we talk about plants, sometimes plants need replanting to a bigger pot, a different pot, new soil, new nutrients. That's what they get from being taken out of their usual environment, put into a different environment. They get to grow bigger. If you are not strong in school subjects, you can grow by being good at football or writing or baking or psychology or whatever your passion is.
And how much does it cost?
It's fairly expensive, unfortunately. The state provides a support for all the families, which is income related. But on average, you would have to calculate around 50, 60,000.
So that's about £6,500, €8,000 for a whole year, residential, food and board and teaching all included. Compared to private schools, residential schools in the UK, that's quite a bargain, actually.
And in recent years, we've had success marketing and promoting the school form also in Copenhagen. And actually, Copenhagen has, in percentage, has seen the largest increase of a region that wasn't formally known to use efterskole that much.
The most Danish conversation I ever overheard was at a dinner party where one mother was complaining that she couldn't get her son into the surfing efterskole that she wanted to get him into, which implies there's more than one after school where you can do surfing for a year. Is that right?
Yeah, to my knowledge, I think we have three or four that do surfing that have sort of water-based activities.
I mean, it just sounds like a paradise for teenagers.
Well, it is. It is. And apart from sort of teaching the sports and the subjects, all the schools value the community and the togetherness of the students. And I think that's really what makes after school special. And it's part of the brand that you make new friends, and very often you preserve them for life.
Is there a benefit for Denmark, for Danish society in efterskole? If so, what, how would you characterize it?
I think it makes people more independent, and it gives you a basis for acting and making decisions about your own life.
Højskole have taken off in the other Nordic countries, particularly in Norway, but efterskole doesn't seem to have spread. Why not?
Efterskole grew out of a tradition in the rural Denmark where youngsters would stay at home, help with the harvest and the sowing, and then in the winter months they would go to efterskole after the obligatory school was ended after 7 years. And I don't know if the structures in other countries have been different, if there were other opportunities or whether nobody just thought of it. One of the sort of cultural features that I don't know if efterskole is a consequence or I think it helps preserve it, is about parents letting kids go, you know, release them from social control and allow them to go somewhere different at a quite young age.
That was Mette Hjort Madsen telling me all about the Danish efterskole. Around 30,000 students attend them each year, she told me, and they're only getting more and more popular, apparently. That figure is increasing at a rate of about 1,000 a year. And young people in the Nordic region aren't just encouraged to study within their homelands. There are a wide range of opportunities to travel elsewhere to learn. With Britain pulling out of the Erasmus Education Exchange Programme after Brexit, students there can only look on in envy at the opportunities for young people in the Nordics. Bringing us full circle back to Finland, I met up with two Finnish students who have chosen to study in Copenhagen. I wanted to find out about the challenges and advantages of studying in another Nordic country and, not least, to hear why on earth they had left the amazing Finnish education system to come to Denmark.
My name is Krista Elmgren. I'm 25 years old. I'm studying political communication and management at CBS.
Krista, the whole world thinks the Finnish education system is the best in the world. Why on earth have you come to Copenhagen?
It was a combination of wanting something new, but at the same time, not something that I don't know anything about. The academic freedom it's a bit different here, I think. The Finnish system has its plus in that you become quite independent. You are used to thinking, okay, no one else is going to take care of me, so to say. If I want to have a study group, I need to make one of myself. But then the Danish system you become more social, I think.
Yeah, because the Danes, it's almost like their superpower, isn't it? Socializing, yeah. And teamwork. Have you noticed that as a difference?
Yeah, we're in the Nordics, but there's a more social aspect, so you're not as introvert in some things.
How have you coped with Danish? Because Danish is famously quite difficult, even for the other Scandinavian nations to understand.
Yeah, I agree. You just need to throw yourself out there, and even though it might be, the pronunciation is like, where is this coming from? But yeah, once you just throw yourself in and might sound a bit silly or mega silly sometimes, it gets easier.
Emma Cheng is another Finn who's chosen Copenhagen Business School for her studies. She's doing a master's in human resources management. I asked her why she wanted to stay within the Nordics and not go elsewhere in the EU or USA to continue her studies.
I do have a very strong, love for the Nordic countries. I've had a dream of living in all of them. I've worked with a lot of Danes as well. Learning the language was also one thing. And I think Copenhagen Business School in itself was just, something that I really wanted, or where I wanted studies.
How does it work economically?
They have a student benefits here called ESU. You get a lot of money. You can earn quite a lot and then still get ESU.
More than in Finland?
Yes. But if you're a foreigner, then you have to work at least 40 hours per month in order to be eligible for ESU.
What would you say is the greatest challenge to coming to Copenhagen?
The language, for sure. We don't have very many oral exams in Finland, and they do them, or they use them a lot in Denmark. I really like them nowadays, but the first one was very intimidating.
That's all for this week's special episode of the Foreign Desk Explainer. Listen out for more of these editions produced by me, Michael Booth, in association with the Nordic Council of Ministers. It was edited by the team at Monocle 24 in London. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.